Meeting is called order. This is a meeting of the Senate Education Committee for this, the first session of the 27th Alaska Legislature. Good morning, everyone. The date is April 4, 2011, and the time is 8 a.m. In attendance today are Co-Chair Meyer, Vice Chair Davis, Senator Stevens, and Senator French, we are informed, is on his way. And we do have a quorum to conduct business. Purpose of the meeting today is to hear from three deans of the Schools of Education within the University of Alaska. All three deans will be with us today. Mary Snyder, Dean UA College of Education, be online, as well as Eric Madsen, Dean of UAF College of Education, and Deborah Lowe is the Dean of UAS, University of Alaska Southeast College of Education, is here with us today. As we have done through the session, we have looked at as many aspects of education in the state. One of the bills we heard, SB 83, had to do with national teacher certification. We learned about the national certification process when we heard the bill. Thought it would be good for us to speak directly with the deans of the college in Alaska, see how they are preparing our teachers to educate our students. We submitted a series of questions to the three deans in advance. I have before you a copy of the questions and the composite responses of the deans. Essentially, the questions dealt with issues of teacher preparedness. We are interested in how teachers are prepared to teach in Alaska, the process, the standards, and how relevant their preparation is to their practice of teaching. I ask the deans to be with us today to present their answers, to elaborate on the answers, to tell us what their particular schools are doing to prepare our teachers. We'll start with Dean Lowe from the University of Alaska Southeast. If you will please come forward, put yourself on the record and your name and affiliation, and walk us through the question and answers that you folks had submitted to us, if you would, please. And we'll take questions possibly along the way, unless that starts to bog us down too much, and then we'll end the presentation. Go from there. So, if you would, go ahead. Put yourself
on
record. Good
morning. I'm Deborah Lowe. I'm the dean of the School of Education at UAS, and I'm new to Alaska. I arrived in July, and I tell you that so that you know my perspective from the lower 48. And the faculty at UAS, I'm happy to say, are some of the most hardworking and dedicated faculty I've had the pleasure of working with. What makes our program unique, I think, is that we take it out of Juneau. We serve the students where they are. I had a faculty member come back this weekend, and she spent 3 nights sleeping on the gym floor so that she could serve the needs of a special ed teacher way out in the bush. So very dedicated faculty.
Before you proceed, let me mention that Senator French has arrived, and we also have online Dr. Eric Madsen, the Dean of UAF, and Dr. Mary Snyder, the UAA Dean of College of Education.
Okay.
Please proceed. Sorry.
Okay. We're proud of our program. We're NCATE approved. NCATE is the gold standard for teacher education, and we are NCATE approved. We're going back up. We have a visit in October. And we're working very hard towards that visit. Our programs are aligned with all of the NCATE standards as well as the Alaska State standards, and they're also aligned with National Board standards. Our students do very well. Our pass rates on the Praxis exam, which is the teacher exam, both 1 and 2, are very, very good. Better than either of the two institutions I've come from. We're proud of our students. We're proud of the work that we do. I didn't come with much of a presentation. We put a report together. I came prepared to answer questions.
Chairman?
Certainly. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Dean. We've had this task force working on university education over the past year here, and one of the issues we keep coming up against is Praxis and how so many folks are upset about Praxis. They don't like Praxis. They seem to think it's not working as it should. Maybe there are other programs, other testing methods that might be more appropriate. Could you give us a little perspective on that? Is Praxis? I'm glad to hear we're doing well on it, but is there some reason why it's not the perfect piece to help us decide who's going to be a good teacher?
Well, it's sort of like the SAT and the ACT. It's a terrible test, but it's the best measure we have, and that is true for the Praxis exam. Praxis 1 measures general knowledge and ensures that our teachers go out with a body of knowledge. Praxis 2 ensures that they're prepared to teach that body of knowledge. So while it may not be a perfect instrument, it's the best instrument that we have, and I think it works fairly well.
Is there some cultural issue there that the people are concerned about? Because I've got to tell you, we've heard numerous people complain about it, not only teachers, but administrators and professionals.
Are they complaining about Praxis 1 or 2, or do you know?
I think it's Praxis 1.
Yeah. Praxis 1. Well, unfortunately, and this has been a problem all over the country, not just in Alaska, when people are stopped and told that they need remediation, they're not happy about that, and they're very vocal about their unhappiness. At the same time, our primary obligation as schools of education is to the children of Alaska, and we cannot put teachers out there who do not have good content knowledge. We just can't.
Well, thank you, Dean, and it's certainly not implying that we should dumb it down. Absolutely not, but it's an issue that we should continue looking at, I suppose, and I'm pleased to hear your response. Thank you.
Possibly then we'll have the other two deans make some initial statements, and then we'll go from there with further questions regarding the answers that we received back. And one that I would ask you to maybe think about is, as we do the other two deans, is in regards to what we're talking about right now, the concept of people when they enter the program. Do we actually do some kind of process that gives them a better idea of what teaching is going to be, so that they might at that point in time either reconsider or say, no, this is what I've always wanted to do, and therefore we go forward? Or is there any kind of evaluation done for people to say, boy, you just don't seem to have the propensity for this, you know, you'd probably do better, you did great in math, so maybe you should be in the accounting department or something like that. But anyhow, with that in mind, maybe we'll have next up Dean Snyder with UAA, if you would care to put yourself on the record, and then when we do later on respond to questions, if people would at least indicate who they are when they respond to a question, if they're taking that question. Dean Snyder, are you
Thank
with
you.
Us?
Let me go ahead and talk about gates for our students and making sure that they're, you know, really in the right field. We've found that early on we can kind of predict which students may have problems when they student teach. So we've really moved a lot of resources down to the freshman-sophomore level, where we used to be a professional program and most students wouldn't take their coursework till they're juniors. We're pushing our coursework down earlier. We're getting them out in the field earlier. We're adding more field experiences so they have a variety of experiences, not only so they get diverse experiences, but so that we can observe our candidates in other, you know, in a number of fields. So that's one thing. We've added a retention coordinator to work with students and make sure that they're really, you know, do they bring deficits with them, or are these things that maybe lots of people need remediation with or help with, so that we can kind of identify where there are weaknesses or where students might have some issues, and either help them solve those issues or counsel them out of the program if we really don't think they're going to make it as teachers. So we try to do that earlier on and involve faculty in more ways that more heavily in that process. Like Dr. Lowe, we also do, our students do well on Praxis 1 and 2. I think it's probably the whole issue with testing generally. Just because you do well on Praxis doesn't mean you're going to be a great teacher, and just because you don't do well, as long as you're getting content knowledge along the way, you might be a great teacher. So it's not a real true predictor, just like many of the other tests that we're looking at in education anymore. So. We also are NCATE accredited. We had our visit last spring. We did exceptionally well. We had all of our programs passed, and we had no areas of improvement noted. We do distance education. 62% of our courses are offered distance. 7 of our whole programs are 100% distance, and we're looking to increase so all of our programs are 100% distance within the next 3 years. So that's enough for now, I think, unless you have questions.
Okay, well, maybe we'll have Dr. Ardeen Eric Madsen make some initial comments, and then we'll enter the question and answer phase. Dr. Madsen, are you with us this morning?
Yes, I am.
Please put yourself on the record and give us at least some initial comments, as you were, I'm sure, involved in the responses to the questions, so there may be some particular area you want to point out at this point in time.
Okay, thank you for that opportunity, Senator Meyer and members of the committee. My name is Eric Madsen. I'm Dean of the School of Education at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Let me comment on just some of the points that I think I've heard you raising during the first few minutes here. University of Alaska Fairbanks School of Education has been involved heavily with rural programs for at least 40 years. As you may know, we used to have faculty on the rural campuses, but as the number of students in those programs got smaller and smaller, primarily due to the reduction in external grants that we had to help with their financial situation, and also with the increase of technology, it became made more sense for us to conduct those programs from Fairbanks. So now all of our programs are available to students both in urban areas and also in rural areas. In fact, we believe that the combination of students from both of those contexts is a benefit to both of them. A couple of comments in regard to praxis that may be helpful. While it may be true that there are some culturally inappropriate questions on there, by and large, what we've noticed is that the discrepancy is not between urban students and rural students or native students and non-native students, but where there are discrepancies in scores, they tend to be more related to the recency of students' training. So, for example, where students took their math courses 10 years ago or 12 years ago or 15 years ago and decided that they now want to come back and pursue a teaching degree, yes, those students do have problems with the praxis section. But for students who have been prepared recently, seem to have very little problem with it at all. You asked about when students enter the program. I think there are two things that I could point to. One is that we have a rigorous screening program when they come in to find out both what it is they want to do and the skills and the abilities and the inclinations they bring with them. And then, as Dean Snyder mentioned, we also have very early practicum experiences where the students get into the classrooms and find out if this is really something that they want to do long term. So I think that for now, those are the comments that I would offer. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Questions at this point?
Well, maybe.
Sure, Senator Stevens.
Thank you for those comments, Dean Madsen. Could you tell us how I mean, I realize one of the big issues we have in the native villages is that bringing in outsiders and not have not having teachers in those villages it really helps that they have a native background. So I know you're trying to do things to bring more native people into education. What are you doing in terms of, does everyone have to still spend the same amount of time on campus, or are there ways that that we're working with students so they don't have to spend as much time there?
Yes, were you speaking to me? I'm Eric Madsen.
Yes, the question's for you, Dr. Madsen.
Okay. Senator Meyer, members of the committee, yes, all of our programs are available to students in rural communities. It is true that there are certain points in their programs where they may need to come on campus, for example, for a summer. But with the exception of that, all of our programs can be completed from the communities where the students live and work.
And is that working out then? Are you developing a cadre of teachers from that program that is worth pursuing?
From our perspective, it's working out very well in terms of the preparation that the students receive. One thing that has changed over the past few decades is that students, even in the smallest communities, have a much broader horizon in terms of the professions that they're interested in. So while we're glad that students from very small communities are interested in becoming electrical engineers and physicists and all of those things, we find that it does make it very difficult to attract them into public education.
Thank you.
Thank you. And could you also maybe expand, and this is Senator Thomas, not Senator Meyer, so just so it doesn't continue on the record that way, if you would if you would comment some on how we actually do recruiting and make sure that we can get those teachers back to the villages, because I understand that the number is rather stagnant as far as those recruited in the rural areas and those returning to the rural areas, and I understand that the conditions in many of those areas are pretty dismal, which probably requires more emphasis on rural teachers being educated and going back versus people from outside that will probably go and be just astounded at how dismal the situation is and not stick around in those places unless they're really an outdoors person kind of individual. And also there's a huge cultural situation that exists, as well as just the way the village operates on its own. So could you respond a little bit about how you actually do that recruitment process?
Yes, Senator Thomas, through the chair. I agree that the number of students from rural communities who are pursuing education is getting smaller, but from my perspective, that a lot of that has to do with the status of the profession right now. In fact, public education is not a high-status profession, and we can see that in terms of salary discrepancies. We can see that in terms of working conditions. So if we were to point to one thing that we could do that would attract more rural teachers in particular, but teachers in general, it would be to address some of those kinds of issues in terms of the teacher's retirement system, in terms of the respect that educators get, and in terms of salary levels.
And thank you. And just as well as along that line, am I correct in understanding that you think that there's more mentoring and more class, and there's more ability for kids in the rural areas to see other professions such as engineering, and the university's done a great job of instituting the ANSEP program, that is causing more education to take place and more kids to get educated from the rural areas, but a broader spectrum of pursuits of professions?
Yes, Senator Thomas, I would very much agree with that. Okay. And while that's a wonderful thing on one hand, for those of us in public education, it does create some additional challenges.
And another one that I have regarding the internship, and anybody can answer, hop in anytime you want. If somebody else wants to respond to these, then give Dr. Madsen a little break. But through the teacher education program, you spend a year internship in a particular school, and that's an unpaid period of time, that's correct. Actually, you pay for the classes, that's like taking another class. So you're unpaid for another year, which is a little unusual, even though it's still considered education, I guess, little unusual for any occupation to work the first year for no pay. So is my understanding of that correct, that that's just considered part of the educational aspect, is to do that internship?
Senator Thomas, let me respond very briefly and then turn it over to Dean Lowe and Dean Snyder. And that is, yes, in one sense they're in the classroom full-time, but the majority of them are not fulfilling the full-time duties of a teacher on their own. In other words, they're working under the guidance of a master teacher, so they're still in the advanced learning stage, but not yet in the first year of professional service.
And do you know... Go ahead.
This is Mary Snyder, UAA. I would add that our students don't stay in the same school. They're at least two schools during that year's experience, so that they can experience, you know, different levels of classroom teaching.
In our program, it's true that for the most part they are in unpaid internships. The exception would be special education. Many of them are already teachers being trained to specialize in special ed. They're in the classroom, and we go out and work with them in their classrooms. So they are indeed being paid.
Do you think that anyone that cares to respond, do you think that, I guess, first of all, do they pick the schools that they want, or are they just kind of assigned a school or given options so it's kind of narrowed in to direct them in a certain area?
They often pick, especially with our rural students, they want to stay where they are. They want to stay in their village. So they are picking the schools. our special ed, because it's such a critical shortage area in Alaska, we're bringing up teachers from the lower 48 often and then trying to get them the special ed credential so they're hired into a school building, and then we step in and try to do that specialized training.
Okay.
Senator Thomas, may I add a comment?
Certainly, and then Senator Meyer had a question. Please proceed.
This is Eric Matson again. I agree with Dean Lowe in the sense that many of our particularly rural students and to a certain extent urban students may ask to work in a particular community or a particular building, but we're quite adamant that that negotiation process takes place under the supervision of a faculty member. The most important thing is that we want the intern to be in a classroom setting and working with a mentor teacher who's going to be able to help them. So it's not entirely their choice, although they may say that they would prefer to work in a particular community or in some cases a particular school.
Very good. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, some general questions that is probably somewhere in the material we have here, but I'd like to ask anyway. I guess the first question is, we know there's a huge demand for teachers in the state of Alaska, and it's a bit troubling if we have to recruit these teachers from the lower 48, because oftentimes they don't last. In other words, you know, if you recruit somebody from Seattle and send them out to Bethel, many times that's a little more of a cultural shock than what they're prepared or ready for. So what are we doing to try to meet the demand, and how close are we meeting demand of teachers in the state of Alaska through the three campuses? I frankly have no idea how many teachers that we are graduating per year, and also how do we maybe get the teachers that we do have to look at the areas that the highest demand is in, like special education?
We do that. This
is Mary Snyder. I have that data in front of me. Last year, in 2010, we graduated all three MAUs together, so all three universities graduated a little over 200 teachers. That's about a quarter to 30% of the what's really needed in Alaska as far as teacher turnover and new teachers and new positions needed. So.
And may I add a comment to that?
Certainly. Put yourself on the record each time you speak, though, then keeps the record straight. The record keepers are smiling when I say
University
that.
Of Alaska Fairbanks. One of the things that we are discovering in recent years, we now have preliminary data to indicate that teachers who are prepared in state actually stay longer in their positions. ICER has been very helpful in that, for example, and some of the research conducted by faculty members is beginning to show that. We're not yet to the point where we can equate that with student achievement, but if you accept the premise that the teachers who have been in position longer and who have a greater depth of experience work better with their students, then we think that that's an optimistic sign. In regard to getting teachers to take positions where they're most needed. Personally, I'm of the opinion that I think we need to get to the point where we offer incentives. We need to put our best teachers in the classrooms and in the schools and in the districts where they're most needed. And that doesn't always happen by choice. So if we really are serious about particular areas where we need highly experienced teachers, then I think we need to offer them some incentive to consider those positions.
This is Mary Snyder. I'd like to add one thing, talking about rural schools particularly. One of the initiatives that UAA has, and we're in our second year, is we have private funding from an individual to take our program out to Chivac, and we have 15 students who are paraprofessionals who are enrolled in our elementary ed program. They will be able to, we send the faculty out there, and the rest of the instruction is done with distance support. And we anticipate that all of these 15 paraprofessionals who are all Chupik and Chupik speakers will become teachers in that area. And there's a lot of support from their community as well as from the district to get these people, get this cohort through. We think this same model, this grow your own, where you do it in a cohort from villages that are interested, will be successful in other places. Beryl has also approached us and asked us about doing the same thing up there, replicating the model and using El Salvador College.
If I may, this is Eric Metz again, and I very much agree with Dean Snyder on that. This year, if you do not count our counseling interns, but just our elementary and secondary interns, we have 63 interns in 18 communities, and only four of those communities are in the Big Five, Juneau, Anchorage, Matsu. And that the other 14 communities include some very remote places, Jafornik and Mnemonic and Queefluk, and then it also includes some of the regional centers, such as Dillingham and Bethel and Kotzebue.
Very good.
And UAS, we have the PETAS program that heavily recruits rural and native students. We're taking it, if we're refunded, taking it statewide next year. The other thing that we're doing that I'm relatively proud of, or very proud of, actually, is we are designing a undergraduate special ed program, and it will be the only one in the state, unless Mary and Eric sign on. But we think it's important to start training students early and get them out there.
Very good. Senator Meyer, Senator French, then Senator Stevens, and Senator Meyer.
I was just going to follow up.
Oh, if that's on that, certainly.
Well, let me just quickly follow up. If we're not meeting the need, in fact, it sounds like we're not even coming close. If we're only meeting 25% to 30% of demand, what can we do to get a little closer to meeting the need of our Alaska schools? And I think I heard the idea of some incentives or something, and perhaps if we can help in that area, we'd like to know, you know, maybe instead of doing a general merit or needs-based scholarship program, maybe we should do a scholarship to, you know, encourage people to go in the teaching area. But I think that's something this committee would like to know, is how we could help meet this demand for teachers.
Well, we are, Deborah Lowe from UAS, we are a very small school. We have 13 faculty members. And we produce a goodly number of teachers, about 90 on average every year. From a personal perspective, we could use more faculty. If we had more faculty, we could be more productive. Right now, my faculty's maxed out. I mean, they're tired. I can look at them and see that they're tired. So from my perspective, that would be helpful, incentives, having people go into education. Would certainly be helpful, but again, we're pretty much at capacity right now.
So if I may,
certainly.
If you had additional faculty, you could graduate more teachers.
We could grow more.
Because it sounds like you're doing almost half of them now.
We're doing quite a few, and we could do more if we had more faculty, and we would like to do more.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, hey, this is Eric Madsen. I was certainly echo Dean Lowe's comments. I think incentives could be useful in terms of the specific discipline, the specific age level that we encourage teachers to consider. But to get people into the profession, we're going to need to look at things like scholarships. The Alaska Teacher Loan Forgiveness Program some years ago, I think, was very effective in that way. But our faculty, like Juneau, and I suspect maybe similar in Anchorage, is really running pretty much at capacity. We have people that are doing about as many supervisions and teaching as many classes as I would be comfortable asking them to do each year. So that if we're going to address this 25% in any meaningful way, then we need to address the capacity of the UA system, education, colleges and schools, to accept and to graduate more students.
And Mary Snyder from UAA, the same. Certainly more faculty would help us increase capacity and incentives for students to go into education, and the loan forgiveness policy that Eric was talking about was effective. I think, though, we need to realize that we're never going to be able to fulfill 100% of the demand because of just the population base that we're working off of. I think the UA system could probably double capacity if we had more faculty, but I don't know if we'll ever get to 100%.
Okay. Thank you. Senator French, you had a...
Actually, Senator Meyer, in this last round of questions, has answered many of my questions about sort of workforce development, what the capacity is, and so forth. It seems, though, if we know that teachers educated in Alaska stay at their jobs longer, I guess I would hope that the university president and the Board of Regents would be bringing forward proposals to us to take care of that. It's pretty unusual for us to sort of on our own decide to add faculty members in any college. It's just not sort of what we think we have to do here. But I'd be supportive, and I hope the Regents and the university president are listening. I guess if you're ready to move to a different topic, Mr. Chairman, I would ask maybe something more global, and that is, you know, how do we measure teacher effectiveness? How do you know when you have a successful teacher, and what can we do to promote that more, teacher effectiveness?
Well, we are evaluation heavy. We're evaluating them from the time they walk in the door, dispositions, content knowledge, pedagogy. Dispositions is a big issue, Senator Thomas, as you alluded to. And occasionally we do have to counsel students out. Occasionally we have to dismiss them. Nobody likes it. It's not pleasant. We had to dismiss two this year. But as I said earlier, our primary obligation is to the children in schools, not to the adults in our programs. And if we have a candidate who is clearly not intended to be a teacher, we have to do the hard thing, and we do.
Mary Snyder again at UAA. I would add that during their internship, our candidates are evaluated by independent clinical faculty member from the university or a regular faculty member from the university. They certainly have a lot of input from their, we call them mentor, what Eric calls a master teacher. We call them mentor teacher. And also, you know, with, the principal and others in the building give us feedback on that intern. We also survey our students at 1, 3, and 5 years out once they're in the field to say, you know, how's it going? Did you learn what you needed to know at UAA to help you be an effective teacher? And we also surveyed principals saying about the people in your building who are our graduates, how did they do? How are they doing?
Very Patterson, if I can just add a comment to that.
Certainly. Certainly, go right ahead.
I agree with Mary. We also survey both our graduates and their employers at 1, 3, and 5 years out. But the topic that people are sometimes reluctant to address, and I think that we need to talk about, is ultimately the success of a professional is in terms, particularly an education professional, is in terms of student achievement. We've had some unfortunate experiences in that recently where NCLB, for example, was measuring the progress that one cohort of students made against the progress that a totally different cohort of students made. And understandably, educators are reluctant to be measured on those kinds of bases, which have some very serious questions. But I think that the profession in general is willing to be accountable if we are talking about a measure that actually indicates what it is that the teacher contributes to the classroom and to the individual students over a period of years. So done right, I think that that's something that the profession would be willing to talk about very seriously. And that's ultimately the what it is that we all want to be able to do is to impact student achievement.
Thank you. Senator Stevens, you had a question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it's really a great pleasure to have all three deans with us because you have such an opportunity to make such an enormous impact on what happens in Alaska, and really thank you for the job you're doing. As a parent, some 10 years ago, my daughter decided to get a master's in teaching, and at the time I was a professor for the university, and so looked around at all three schools to find out what was the best one for her. In the end, we decided it was best for her to come to Juno, and she got her MAT here. And it was sort of surprising to me that there was such diversity in the three systems, and I thought, well, that may not be good, but frankly, the more I think about it, the better I think it is. You know, if each of the three campuses have a different approach, they attract a different student, can you sort of tell me how, and I think looking at differences may be more valuable than looking at similarities.
sort of tell me how the three campuses look at their program as being different from the other programs in the state.
Deborah Lowe from UAS. I believe our program is a little different in our responsiveness to students. And sometimes it worries me. Sometimes I think we go too far. We hold their hands too much. We're too out there with them. But ultimately, our students tell us that this is valuable, that they needed us there. And our faculty are very good about that. Sometimes, I think, to a fault.
So the students, Senator Stevens, again, the students you attract would be probably a little different than the students that would be attracted maybe to Anchorage or Fairbanks, none being bad, all being good, but how would you categorize your students as compared to the students that attend the other MAUs?
Well, I think the majority of our students want to be in their communities and want to receive their education in their communities. We only have two programs that are Juno-based. Elementary, we have two options, a master's and an undergraduate elementary program, and then we have a secondary program here in Juno, a secondary MAT. Everything else can be done by distance, e-learning.
Thank you. And what would be the differences, say, in Fairbanks to the students you attract and the program you have, Eric?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, one of the things that I, from my perspective, the three programs have been, over the past 10 years or so, very dynamic in the ways that they change. There was one time, for example, when Fairbanks prided itself on being the university that delivered programs to rural students. We recognize now that that's simply not true. Both Anchorage and Juno do that very effectively. What I've appreciated working with Dean Lowe and with Dean Snyder over the past few years and with Dean Lowe's predecessors is looking on a very regular basis at the areas where it makes sense to collaborate. We've worked very hard, for example, on developing special education programs simply because of the very high need in the state for special ed teachers. Where it makes sense to have multiple programs, for example, the number of elementary teachers that the state needs, from our perspective, it does make sense to continue programs at each of the campuses. So I've appreciated the opportunity to work with them and to look at that literally on an annual basis to try to decide where we can be branching out, where we could use our total capacity to provide more programs to more students in the state, rather than duplicating things where it doesn't make sense to. So I need to give them credit for their willingness to do that. And I think that's been a very constructive process.
Thank you.
Very good. Other questions at this point? We had offered a question to you that we had been looking at national certification for teachers and how well did the curriculum in the state of Alaska align with the board of professional teaching standards demands for certification, and we actually passed out legislation that would increase the pay just a small amount, but it's already being done in some districts. So wanted to have you respond to that a little bit. It's a rather rigorous process, as we understand. Some say even more important potentially than receiving a master's degree, and covers a variety of areas. If we could get you to comment just a little bit on how you view board certification, and we understand that from your answer that you do line up well and that you do have board certified teachers in your program, but if it would be helpful for us to maybe get reinforcement from you that we acted in a reasonable manner anyhow, if nothing else.
This is Mary Snyder from UAA, and this is something I'm particularly excited about because we have just revised our master's program and based it on the national board standards. And the same with our elementary ed program, so that pre-service teachers coming out will have been exposed to those standards. And anyone coming back for a master's, our program parallels, and we won't guarantee they'll be nationally board certified, but they will be well prepared to go for their national boards and be supported in all the different steps that nationally board certified teachers have to take along the way.
And I agree with Dean Snyder. I think it's important, this is Deborah Lowe, I think it's important to give them those options and to give them fully aligned programs, but national board certification is a very rigorous process. It's a very time-consuming process, and it's not for everyone.
This is Eric Masson, if I can comment.
Sure.
I think that the national board process has been a very good one for Alaska and a very good one for the nation. It gives a set of rigorous standards that teachers can hold themselves up to. I think we have something now like 20 or 25 graduates who obtain national board certification. I would be a little bit more reluctant about national certification standards if we were saying that a teacher who graduates from a program in Alabama must look exactly like a teacher who graduates from a program in Alaska. That, I think, would not be helpful. You perhaps noticed earlier that each of our programs mentioned that in addition to the NCATE standards and in addition to the standards of professional associations that we respond to, our faculties have also said there are additional things that we think are important, and we don't want any graduates coming out of our programs without meeting these additional things in addition to the specialized professional associations and the NCATE standards. So I would be reluctant about one set of certification standards that all teachers had to achieve anywhere in the nation.
And we certainly understand that, because I think even in the National Board of Professional Teaching Standards, they recognize the difference between rural and urban and different cultural differences that exist between different ethnic groups. So, how do you address that in the state of Alaska? Obviously, that is an issue. We keep bringing it up here with you today, and it's brought up repeatedly in everything we're doing, everything from the scholarship program, where it was indicated that in the rural areas the schools are potentially deficit in some areas regarding the curriculum, as well as the ability to bring those kids along based on just cultural standards. And so if you have any comments as to what you've done, I know we've touched on this a little bit, if there's something more specific to just that rural kids and what we might be able to do, that would be helpful. The other day you may have heard that one Native leader, head of one of the regional corporations, indicated that although she thought it might not be popular, that boarding schools would be very helpful. And I don't know if you care to enter into that conversation at all, but as far as bringing kids from some of the areas and getting more specific attention, I guess, in a larger school that would have more diversity, if you care to comment on that potential.
Yes, Senator, this is Eric Manson. I'll start with a very brief comment, and that is, I think one of the questions that you submitted to us spoke to that very directly in terms of the collaboration between each of our teacher preparation programs and our colleagues in the public schools and in the public school districts. And as we indicated in our responses, we talk with them on a very regular basis at both informal and formal levels, recognizing that schools in different parts of our state, different schools even within certain of our cities, look very different from each other. And so we need to be in touch with them on a constant basis and recognizing and responding to those differences.
Yep. Mary Snyder, UAA, to tag onto that, but then also to address the issue of the boarding schools or the hub schools. There are very few courses that cannot be taught effectively, high quality courses, with K-12 kids now through technology. And rather than pull more kids out of villages to put them in regional high schools or boarding schools, I think we need to look at a different way of using technology, different than what we've done in the past. And I'm very confident that the coursework is out there, it's available, the curriculum. But we need to figure out how to deliver that in such a way that the teacher becomes more facilitative in his or her role in that village classroom, where they can help the students learn, maybe without having the depth of content that they would need if they were had to teach the course themselves or the curriculum themselves.
And I echo Deborah Lowe. I agree with what Dean Snyder has said, but I would encourage you to think about one more issue, and Robert Heckman and his research that won him the Nobel Prize told us that as a society, if you want the most bang for your buck, and that's a horrible phrase, but you go for early childhood. because that's where you can make a real difference. And I think in Alaska we need to address that and address it pretty rigorously. Because if we lose them at the early childhood age, we've lost them for good.
Never make it up.
I agree.
Just another question on the rural schools. When, you know, and this is my limited knowledge of it. If we have a village of 300 or 400 people and you have 20 students ranging from kindergarten to high school, what kind of teacher does it take to actually, you know, because obviously they're going to be limited to a very few number of teachers, maybe two in the case of 25 or 30 students. What kind of an education does a teacher need to actually be able to teach all of that broad curriculum from kindergarten through high school? I realize you supplement it through the distance education. That's true. So I guess there's an offset there of, you know, the amount of knowledge that the individual needs. But maybe you could comment a little bit on how you actually do that to let us get a better feel for it.
Well, I think when you have a situation like that, you're looking at a teacher not in the traditional role of a teacher. You're looking at a facilitator, really, somebody who knows where the resources are, can go out and get those resources for his or her students, and can facilitate the process of learning. They can't necessarily be an expert in all areas, but they can know where the resources are, and they can help organize it and make sure that it happens for students.
Okay. And a little more on that. Is that effective then, especially for the lower grades when you're trying to teach distance and somebody's facilitating? I've been around the elementary school profession, probably more familiar with that, and it seemed that it was almost like that was mom or dad to those little kids when they came to school. And I don't know that the facilitator type image that I'm getting causes me to.
Well, I think it does work, the facilitator image, and it's. This is going to sound strange, but it's very much like gifted education. When I was in gifted classrooms, I'm not gifted, but I can facilitate for those students. I can make it happen for those students. And I think the same is true in these very small villages. We need somebody who can be mom and dad and facilitate, but also has a specialized knowledge base and can move things along.
Okay, great.
Well, Senator, if I can jump in just briefly. This is Eric Mattson, UAF. I think at the elementary level, it is in fact easier for a small number of individuals to have the necessary content expertise to teach the subjects that are required at the elementary level, where that differentiation becomes more important, perhaps where the kinds of distance strategies that Dean Snyder was mentioning become particularly helpful are at the secondary levels. I also would suggest that there may be some intermediate strategies such as short-term intensives in regional centers that are not as far away from students' homes and don't require them to be away from their families and their communities for as long a period of time. Cost-benefit analyses are always risky, and I'm not sure I'm totally comfortable with the concept, but I think that there are some, personally, and I have some very good friends who advocate the boarding school model, the regional school model. I think there's some very real costs to pulling students away from their families and from their extended family networks and from their communities, particularly at ages when there are other skills and that they need to be learning at the same time. So I hope that we would look for ways to supplement their education that would allow them to stay in their communities as much as possible.
Okay, thank you.
And this is Mary Snyder, UAA. I agree with Eric as far as elementary. They are broadly prepared. They're able to master and convey a number of skills across several content fields. Secondary, I think we need to look at broad liberal arts preparation so that maybe a student majors in mathematics or science, but also has a strong language background, language arts background, social studies background, so they're able to speak to that even if that's not their area of expertise.
Very good. Other questions? Seeing none, we appreciate, unless you have any other comments, that anyone would like to make any closing comments from anybody to make sure that you made your point with us as to what you think is important.
Thank you very much for letting us talk about what we're passionate about.
Great. Like I said,
this is very bad. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, no, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. We believe the exchange of information is very helpful as we try and press forward. We're not educators. Well, Senator Stevens is an educator, but the rest of us, as far as I know, are not particularly specifically educators, but we certainly want to do the things that we think are right and that we hear people making comments on. So we appreciate your comments today, and if you would care to, even after having this discussion, forward any further information to us as far as what you see we may be able to add in the equation here, we'd be more than willing to take that under consideration. So with that, we thank you again, and we'll discontinue that at this point in time and see if there's anything else that needs to come before the committee. There are a couple of things as far as what we're up to next. Thank you. And let's see. Our next meeting is Wednesday at 8, where we will we're going to take up SB 107, an act making special appropriation for the new engineering buildings for the University of Alaska in Anchorage and Fairbanks. So we'll get some comments on that. And then on Friday, take up SB 6 again, the establishing a pre-K program in Alaska, and looking forward to the actions that we take potentially this summer with the committee that's been set up on pre-K, and their reporting to us and us attending their meetings was suggestions that we have, and we're refining those, so we'll get that to the committee. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate whoever it was who gave us a copy of the Fisher Report in my folder here. Does everyone else have that?
Yeah.
That's the report that was done last year on the university.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to have time to meet with the university to talk about this Fisher report? Is that a part of your plan, or
we didn't have anything scheduled at this point this year, and we're getting close to the end. That doesn't mean that we couldn't have some committee meeting through the summer. I guess we could kick that around. I don't know.
I think that would be valuable, Mr. Chairman, if you can arrange it. It'd be nice to there's another report that was done years ago, which I don't think the university – I don't think the legislature ever really had a chance to talk with the university about it. But, and I have not read through this, but it'd be really, I think, valuable for us to hear the response of the university to the Fisher Report, and maybe sometime in the interim would be great.
Okay. All right. Any other comments or questions on either today's topic or what we're looking forward to doing over the remainder of the week? If not, we will close the meeting, and it is just a couple of minutes before 9 a.m. Thank you all.